Okay, well, good morning, everybody. This meeting will please come to order. I am Jamie May, Chairman of Keweenaw Land Association Limited, and on behalf of the directors, the management team, and the employees of Keweenaw, I welcome you all to the meeting. A notice of this meeting was sent to each shareholder of record, an affidavit of mailing, along with the proxy statement for this meeting, the annual report of Keweenaw for 2018, and the record date shareholder list are available for inspection at the table in the back of the room. Today's meeting is being recorded, and a download or transcript of the recording is expected to be made available on the company's website at a later date, subject to confirming certain technical issues. Additionally, a PowerPoint of the presentation to be given later during the informational portion of this meeting has been posted to the company's website. For those of you participating telephonically that may want to follow along, or for those of you desiring a recap of the presentation. Moving on, prior to this meeting, the company appointed Innisfree M&A as inspectors of election for this annual meeting. Jason Graham from Innisfree is present here today to coordinate on their behalf. Can Jason identify himself? Okay. If anyone has a proxy to vote at today's meeting that has not yet been delivered, please give it to Mr. Graham. Keweenaw's transfer agent has certified a list of directors of the company as of the close of business on March 29th, which was the record date fixed by the board of directors for the shareholders entitled notice of and to vote at this meeting. This list shows that there were 1,303,342 shares of common stock of the company outstanding and entitled to vote. A majority constitutes a quorum for this meeting. I am advised by Innisfree that a quorum is present and that the business of the meeting may proceed. I would now like to introduce our directors who are present. Ian Haft, Don Hoffman, Marjorie Nesbitt, Steve Winch, Jan Loeb, Paul Sonkin, and myself. Next, I would like to introduce Mark Sherman, Claudio Nicoletta, and Paula Idrua. Mr. Sherman is president and CEO of our company. Mr. Nicoletta is the chief financial officer and treasurer of the company. And finally, Ms. Idrua is the secretary of the company. Mr. Sherman and Ms. Idrua are serving as proxies for shareholders who voted by proxy. I would also like to introduce Mike Maleko and Pat Brennan of Grant Thornton LLP, our accounting firm, and Brad Wyatt of Dickinson Wright, our legal counsel, who is participating in the meeting via teleconference. Mr. Maleko and Mr. Brennan will be given an opportunity to make a statement later if they would like, and at the end of the meeting, they and Mr. Wyatt will also be available to answer any questions. If any shareholder wishes to make a motion or second a motion, please state your name when speaking so our meeting record will be complete. Persons making or seconding motions should be record holders of our stock or proxies for record holders. So, moving on to formal business, we'll start with approving the minutes. The minutes of the 2018 annual meeting of shareholders were made available to you at the entrance to the meeting. I would accept a motion approving the minutes, and I would suggest that one of our proxies make the motion.
My name is Mark Sherman, and I move that the minutes of the meeting. Shareholders be approved.
Is there a second for the motion?
My name is Paula Isla, and I second.
We will now vote on the motion to approve the minutes. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, say no. The motion is carried. The minutes of the 2018 meeting are approved as presented to the meeting. Mr. Sherman and Ms. Isla, as proxies, were among the persons voting for the motion. Now, for the election of directors. The first item of business is to elect John B. Enlow and Peter C. Madden for election to the Board of Directors to hold office for a three-year term expiring at the 2022 annual meeting or for a one-year term if Proposal 2 is adopted. In accordance with the bylaws of the company, stockholders are required to provide advance notice of their intent to nominate candidates for directors. No such notice was received, therefore I declare the nominations closed. I would accept a motion regarding the election of the directors. I would suggest that one of the proxies make the motion.
I move that John B. Hemelow Sr. and Peter Spadden are hereby elected as directors of the Land Association for a term expiring at the annual meeting year 2020 and until the election qualification of the successors, or 1 year term expiring at the year 2020. This proposal hereby is adopted.
Is there a second for the motion?
I'm Paula Iona. Second that motion.
Next item of business is to amend Article 9 of our Articles of Incorporation. I would accept a motion to approve the amendment to Article 9 that would eliminate classification of our Board of Directors and allow for annual election of all directors.
Chairman, I move that the shareholders approve amend Article 9 of the Articles of Incorporation substantially in the form circulated to the shareholders prior to.
Is there a second for the motion?
I second.
The next item of business is to amend Article 10 of our Articles of Incorporation. I would accept a motion to approve an amendment to Article 10 that would provide for uniform treatment of current shareholders beneficially owning 5% or more of the company's stock.
Mr. Sherman, I move the shareholders to amend Article 10 of the Articles of Incorporation substantially circulated to shareholders prior to.
I have a second.
I second the motion.
The fourth and final item of business is the ratification of Grant Thornton LLP as our independent registered public accounting firm. I would accept a motion to ratify Grant Thornton LLP as our accountant. I would suggest that one of the proxies make the motion.
I move that the appointment of Grant Thornton LLP, the Land Association independent registered public accounting firm for 2019, ratified.
Okay. It is 9:07 a.m. in Ironwood. The polls are now open for voting on the four motions just received. For all four matters to be voted upon today, any shareholder of record who is present and wishes to vote in person may complete a ballot and give it to the inspector. If you've already submitted a proxy with your vote, there is no need to vote again. If you wish to revoke your proxy and vote in person, please advise the inspector when you request your ballot. Please raise your hand if you need a ballot. Any questions on the voting? It's now 9:08 a.m. in Ironwood, and the polls are now closed. Inspector of Election has informed us that preliminary results of the four items voted on today will be available following the informational portion of this meeting. The company will issue a press release announcing the final voting results after they become available. If there is no further business to come before the meeting, I would accept a motion for adjournment of the formal portion of the annual meeting of the shareholders. Would one of the proxies make a motion?
I move that the formal portion of the meeting be adjourned.
You have heard the motion to adjourn. All of those in favor say aye. The motion is carried. The formal portion of the meeting is adjourned. We'll now move on to the informal portion of the meeting, which will include a presentation from management. And perhaps, Paula, if you could come and give some assistance to folks on the phone who might want to ask questions.
If after Mr. Sherman's presentation you wish to ask questions, please raise your hand. And for those of you that are participating telephonically, that would entail pressing star and 5 on your telephone keypad. And when recognized, either in person or telephonically, please state your name, indicate whether you are a shareholder or a proxy for a shareholder. If you are representing a shareholder, please identify the shareholder on whose behalf you are speaking, and your affiliation with such shareholder. Please direct all questions to Mr. May. Thank you.
Okay, so now we'll get started with the presentation. I'll give a couple of comments on the first slide, and then Mr. Sherman will provide an update on the operation. So, as a board, there's been a lot of effort to really reconstitute what we've untechnically referred to as the plumbing of the company's corporate governance structure since the annual meeting last year. As many of you are aware, there were some undisclosed contractual obligations of the company that surfaced during the proxy contest and have extinguished all existing and contingent liabilities associated with that. And we've followed through on all of our platform commitments, perhaps the most important of which is to really give the company back to the shareholders by eliminating corporate defenses such as a staggered board, and also really formalizing and implementing best practices with regard to board structures. And we've created committee charters, and we've had a much, I think, more robust set of regular communications and engagements as board members to really accomplish the goals of the three key committees, which are the Nominating and Governance Committee and the Compensation Committee and the Audit Committee. And really all of those are in some way, shape, or form designed to protect against conflicts of interest on the board. We've improved shareholder disclosure. We're not an SEC reporting company, but we are moving in that direction. And that's not to say we have immediate plans to register, but we just think that, as a matter of best practice, to be providing transparent, relevant information on a timely basis to shareholders is important, and it's something we aspire to get better at. We undertook the fairly colossal effort of changing our public accounting firm for the 2018 audit. We now have Grant Thornton as our public auditor, and they are PCAOB registered, which is a prerequisite for having the stop sign removed for the OTC pink sheet listings. And my understanding is that there were several issues with trading and transfer of shares, and that those have now been lifted within the last couple of weeks. In terms of other platform commitments that we've made, we've reduced the overall board size and expense, despite the hockey team size group is at that table. Some are incoming directors, and some are outgoing directors. I will talk about that a bit later. And we have begun to really focus on one of our core objectives, which is to de-lever the company and create balance sheet flexibility. And Mark is going to speak to, the company has done a fantastic job at maintaining, not only maintaining, but actually growing substantially its core timber operations. So, not to steal his thunder, but 2018 was a record-setting year, and we look to more of the same for 2019. And so really, just to put this all in context, the way I think about it is we've done a lot of heavy lifting in 2018 and really up until pretty recently to get the company positioned where we're on firm footing to look ahead and move forward now. And so now is when the sort of the exciting work begins, because we want to create value and ultimately be in a position to realize it for shareholders. So with that, I'll turn it over to Mark.
Thank you, Jamie, and welcome everybody. This is a privilege for me to be up here for the first time at our 111th annual meeting of shareholders for Keweenaw Land Association. So it speaks to the longevity of this company, and it's something that we as employees and I think as directors are pretty darn proud of. So it's wonderful you could be here, and we'll move right into the presentation. So Keweenaw, at a glance, we own about 184,000 acres of timberland, and in addition to that, another 400,000 acres of mineral rights, most of which is in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, here on the west end of the Upper Peninsula, and we do own some acres of timberland in northern Wisconsin. Our business, our revenues are really driven by growing and harvesting trees and selling them, lands management and wood marketing. That's what we do. But we also generate other revenues from real estate, and we'll talk about other revenues further in the presentation, but certainly real estate sales are an important part of our gross revenues. So moving on to a review of 18 and the first quarter of 2019, we have seen a significant increase in harvest levels since 2015. In fact, we've seen a 41% increase in harvest over that time, and that is driven by two things. We've had an increase of 10% in total acreage during that time, and we had restated our inventory based on inventory, a full land inventory that was done in 2017. That inventory found we had actually 25% more volume on our ownership than what we had booked at that time. So you have an increase in inventory, increase in ownership, you increase your harvest level. And that's a big deal. We've done that really without much increase in personnel, and it's a credit to our foresters and to our entire staff. That trend of increased harvest continues into the first quarter of 2019. You see an increase of 8%, correct? 8% Q1 19 over Q1 18. Part of that is due to the significant increase in procured stumpage that we harvested this winter, but we still see an incremental increase in harvest off company lands. So I'm going to move into kind of the revenue side of it. We have four products that we sell: pulpwood, sawbolts, saw logs, veneer. Pulpwood is our lowest value and highest volume product. Veneer is our highest value and our lowest volume. So that product mix over the course of the years definitely has a big impact on our overall selling price and our revenues. And, so it's important to recognize this, because this will be the theme through my discussion on revenues. And if I can get the pointer to work, you can see in 2015, pulpwood was at 70% of our entire harvest. We finished 2018 at 77%. So you have seen an increase in pulpwood percent, a decrease in some of those higher value products. That is not by design. That has everything to do with the stands that are available to harvest during that period of time. If you look at the first quarter 18 versus first quarter 19, you can see an improvement in that product mix. 18, we were at 80% pulpwood. First quarter this year, we were at 76. And I strongly believe we're going to continue to see an improvement in product mix throughout the remainder of 2019. But keep that in mind. Pulpwood is a key driver to our overall sales price and our revenue streams, and we'll talk more about that. So what do we sell our wood for? And I want to point out 2015, our overall sales price was $143 per cord versus year-end 128 for 2018. That one of the drivers was the relatively low percentage of pulpwood of the mix. However, the big driver is that number right there. We were selling pulpwood at $117 per cord. The pulp market was very, very hot. Mills were low on inventory. When they needed to purchase more wood, the logging capacity that existed in 2015, was low, so the logging community could not react to the increase in demand. As a result, price goes up, which when you put more money out there, logging capacity increases, people buy more equipment, become more productive, and as a result, more supply gets on the market, and you'll see a steady decline right here on pulp pricing to where we are today. I've been in this business for 32 years. The first 23 were working for a pulp and paper mill in lands management and procurement, and I have seen this cycle at least three or four times. It'll reverse itself. Are we at the bottom end of the pulpwood pricing? I'm hoping so. I think so. I think we're going to start seeing a trend back up, but that is to be seen. But this pulp market is very cyclical, and because it's such a large percentage of your product mix, it has an impact, a significant impact on your revenue and your margin. So comparing revenues from year to year, we had a significant jump in revenue from 17 to 18. We were at 11.4 in 17, and we jumped to 14.2 million in 18. And that's a 24% increase. And what are the drivers? 17%, almost 18% of that increase in revenue is driven by the increase in volume. The other remaining 6% is driven by the product and sale price mix. Again, we see that same trend into the first quarter of 2019, in an increase of revenue Q1 19 over Q1 18 of 14%. That is 10% due to volume and approximately 4% due to product mix and pricing. This is kind of where the rubber meets the road, cost of goods sold. And here we are in 2015 at $89, and here we are in 2018. Yeah, you know, $10 a quart, actually significantly higher, $93.50 a quart higher. So our cost of goods sold has increased significantly. If you look across the top, you'll actually see our logging costs have gone down. And that's because we have reduced our logging contract and logging rates. The freight is the key driver. Significant increase from $26.20 to $34.30 over the course of 4 years. It's all driven by two things. We increased our harvest volume by a significant amount. Therefore, we have to find new markets to sell that wood to. Those markets that we are now selling wood to are at greater haul distance from our harvest areas. That drives up costs. And then secondly, our customer preference is more deliveries going direct to the mill and fewer direct deliveries into satellite wood yards. So that, too, drives up your freight costs. Again, freight costs, particularly on pulpwood, is driving our cost of goods sold. Now, Q1 of 2019, that again holds true. You see our freight costs continue to be much higher than historic. However, road costs this past winter are significantly higher than historic. That's driven by our Grant Thornton folks know this. We had a lot of snow in the months of late January through February, and not just in our historic snowbelt areas, but in the entire region in which we operate. So 80 to 100 inches of snow fell across most of our landscape in the month of February, and that's a lot. So that dries up your road costs. You've got to plow that stuff off your roads. So, again, the theme is our cost of goods sold are up, and its cost of goods sold is up, and it's driven by freight. That brings us to margin. Again, 2015, wonderful pulp pricing, very robust margins. On to 18, we're down to $34 a cord on margin. That is an increase over 2017. Q1 18 over Q1 19, we saw that decrease again in 2019 to 30, primarily driven by, again, not so much the freight, because we had that same freight cost here at the end of the year here, but more about roads, and we cut a lot of stumpage, procured wood in the first quarter, so we had elevated stumpage costs as well that drove those margins down. Other income, we did talk about this, so you can see the categories of other income we have here. Worth noting in 2018 is we had a large 1,800-acre land sale to the United States Forest Service that generated $1.5 million, and that was the jump in other income in 2018. As we go into Q1 2019, that one right there is the sale of our securities that happened in March. Claudio, I'm looking at you. Happened in March. So you see a significant increase there. But more notably is our land sales. We've had two land sales year to date at $640,000. We are going to be more focused and more aggressive on land sales, and that would be land sales that we don't consider to be core to our ownership. Those properties that have already been defined as lands that we can sell as recreation or as higher and best use. So that's an important piece of revenue that we intend to grow going forward. And that brings us to our P&L highlights. Most of these things we've already talked about in terms of gross sales. The thing that I would like to point out here for 2018, we ended the year with a net loss of $440,000. That is driven by that line item right there, non-recurring expenses. We had $2.4 million in non-recurring expenses related to the change of control in 2018, as well as work that was done on REIT with giving us the optionality to become a REIT. And we'll likely to continue to see some of these non-recurring expenses in 2019, but certainly not to the degree we saw in 2018. So with that, I'm going to turn this over to Jamie for the Q&A.
Well, just in case the question about the operations,
yep.
You should ask.
People in the room first?
Okay, yeah. Okay. So any questions from folks in the room?
Ron? Just mentioned that one of the primary drivers going for land sales. How many acres does that represent? And you also mentioned that you had identified land going forward. How much land do you have?
You know, it's hard for me to give you an exact answer, but to answer your first question, $640,000 is on two land sales, one of approximately 400 acres. That was a real higher and better use property just outside of the Iron Mountain, and the other was just a 40 acres. So that was on 240 acres. We're going back in history, but back in 2005, we had an employee that was doing real estate for us, needed a real estate plan. The real estate plan identified recreational properties, commercial properties, higher and better use properties. Since updated that in 2013, but the properties identified in 2005 really are the same ones that we're focused on.
If I just did the calculations correct, I mean, that average is like $2,600 an acre for the land that was sold. Was there another part to your question?
Just curious, get a ballpark on you. I understand the value of those acres that you may have identified will vary greatly, but just maybe overall size of identified for sale.
I hate to throw that number out, Ron. I just pull something off the top of my head. Well,
There is an existing plan for potential land that has been targeted for a disposition, and perhaps we can include some more color on that in future disclosures.
Yes.
Other questions from the room? Okay, well, Paula? Yeah?
Again, just to repeat, for those of you who may be listening in telephonically, if you haven't already pressed *5 on your keypad to enter a queue, you may do so now. Do we have any callers on the line?
Hi, this is Kevin Barnes. I'm a private investor with a position in Puna.
Hi, Kevin.
First off, I just would like to express my appreciation to the entire board and management team for the massive amount of changes that have been completed over the last year. I'm just excited to see the direction the company's moving in. I commend all the achievements to date and look forward to seeing the future accomplishments. Just have two quick questions. The first off, in regards to the conservation easement and sale in Wisconsin, can you provide any update on the Joint Finance Committee review process for that sale?
I'll let Mark handle that.
Hi, Kevin. This is Mark Sherman. Question was
Hi, Mark.
On the conservation easement. Hi, Kevin. Now, the question was on the conservation easement that is pending in the state of Wisconsin. So it's approximately 14,000 acres that we're selling basically to the state of Wisconsin at a price of $4.8 million. That is currently with the Joint Financing Committee and still under review, Kevin. And so we're still providing information, data, and support on that going forward. So that's
what we mentioned with the hold.
So there is a hold on it in the Joint Financing Committee, and we're working hard to understand why there is a hold on it. There was no reason given. We're going to have representatives in Madison this week addressing that issue. But right now it continues to be with the Joint Financing Committee and continues to be on hold.
Okay, but in light of that hold, is there still a possibility that you would have budget clearance for closing in 19, or is this pushing back the timing until the next budget cycle?
Our understanding is that the budget cycle goes through June, and so that's the cutoff.
Gotcha. Thank you. That color is useful. Then my second question before I'll cede my position, can you provide any update on the REIT optionality that you're pursuing? Any thoughts on timing or other considerations that would define when that decision would be made?
Yes. So as we disclosed, I think sometime during the fourth quarter last year, this is something that we believe might have merit at some point, but we've tabled it for now. And the primary reason, Kevin, is because the company just doesn't have the liquidity to do it. The company took on about $14 or $15 million in debt, and the net income distribution requirements for a REIT don't provide for amortization of debt. And for us, it's just really a first principle that we never want to be taking financing risk. And so, there are several factors that could change that equation. You know, among them, the closing of the conservation easement. But right now, our determination is that getting the company's debt levels down is the first priority. And given that the REIT conversion would work directly against that, it has to be coming sequentially afterwards.
Understood. Thank you for that additional comment. I'll cede my spot now and let others ask questions.
Okay. Thank you. We'll proceed to the next caller. Okay, that is that.
Okay, and I'll leave the phone open just in case there are any still people listening. Moving on now, our accountants and legal counsel are available to make first any statements if they'd like to make any, and then to answer any questions that anybody might have. So are there any comments that the folks from Grant Thornton would like to make?
Well, first of all, on behalf of Grant Thornton Partners and more importantly, the team that works on the 2018 audit, I want to thank company, the board, and ultimately the shareholders for allowing us part of that process. And we look forward to hopefully hearing some final information on the 2019 audit. Look forward to coming back and well, so thank you very much for getting us involved.
Okay, and we have Brad Wyatt on the line from Dickinson Wright. Brad, are there any comments that you'd like to make at this point?
I wonder if Brad.
Okay. So. How do I do that?
Verbally, Brad, if you're out there. And
yeah. So, Brad, if you would like to speak, Paula is now going to allow you to do so. Are you there, Brad?
This is Steve Fossey.
Oh, so we have another caller. Could you please repeat your name?
It's Steve Fossey. I'm a shareholder.
Okay, and did you have a question you'd like to ask?
I did, yes. I think in the valuation it was mentioned that the timber investment management organizations have less demand for timberland at this point. I was wondering if you could comment on whether you see that as sort of a change in the dynamic of the forestry industry there, or if it's a cyclical element of those organizations and whether it's an opportunity for you.
That's a great question. I don't necessarily have a strong view about whether there's a change occurring in the structure of really the ownership of the properties in the Lake States. I think that there, is a fair amount of just fluctuation given the sort of the buying and selling activities that the TIMOs and the REITs are routinely engaged in. I think that one thing is clear is that there are definitely not there's not an abundance of buyers out there right now, but I don't necessarily have any reason to think that that's a structural change, and we'll have to just keep an eye on that. But to the second part of your question, are there opportunities? I mean, we haven't seen them as of yet. But we certainly hope so. Keweenaw is a strongly capitalized company, and we would love to have the opportunity to grow. And while we haven't seen valuations re-rating meaningfully in the Lake States at this point, if that were to happen, just due to a disparity between buying and selling interest, that would certainly create, potential opportunities that we look at closely.
Great, thanks. If I could ask one more quick question, and I apologize, this may be kind of a little bit down into the weeds, but in increasing your timber harvest, are you changing in any way sort of the mix of commodities and size classes that you'd be harvesting?
I'll leave that one for Mark.
Hi, this is Mark. No, we're certainly not changing the mix that we're harvesting. We're harvesting what is available, what's available on a sustainable basis, what is available as good forestry practices. So the answer is no. We're really not changing that mix significantly. Again, as I mentioned in the presentation, at least through the rest of 2019, I strongly believe we're going to continue to see an improvement in our mix, that is lower percentage of pulpwood and higher percentage of our higher value products. Just in the long run, I would say no, we're not going to see a huge change in that mix based on our harvest practices.
Okay, so it's not driven by, to use the term, high grading. It's just
correct.
What the stand calls for.
It's what the stand's, what's available for harvest, that's correct.
Right. Okay. Thank you.
And just for anybody who might not be aware, I mean, high grading is a term where you seek to extract additional cash flows by harvesting disproportionately the higher value wood. And while it's not generally used as a way to generate volume, it is used as a way to generate cash flow. And we are very expressly not doing that. Okay. Do I need to do something?
Please, is there anyone else out there?
All right, we'll move on to the next caller, if there is one.
Okay.
Mr. Wyatt did text me, and he says he has no comments.
Okay, good. So then at this point, I would open up the room and for folks on the phone to any questions for legal counsel or Grant Thornton, our public accounting firm. Okay. Moving on, the inspector has given us the voting results. So the votes have been counted. Regarding the election of directors, the inspectors report that more than 76% of the shares represented at the meeting have voted for each nominee. I'm sorry, I'm seeing two options here. Accordingly, John Enloe and Pete Madden have been elected as directors of Keweenaw to serve one-year terms. The one-year terms will expire at our annual meeting in the year 2020 or upon the election and qualification of their successors. So congratulations, John and Pete. Regarding the motion to amend Article 9 of the Articles of Incorporation, the inspectors report that a majority of the outstanding shares of stock of the company voted for the amendment. I'll give the tally. The preliminary tally shows 783,843 shares voted for approving the amendment, 69,715 shares voted against the approval, and 3,076 shares abstained from the voting. Based on the vote, the motion to amended Article 9 has passed. Regarding the motion to amend Article 10 of the Articles of Incorporation, the inspectors report that only a minority of the outstanding shares of the stock of the company voted for the amendment. The preliminary tally shows 550,662 shares voted for approving the amendment, 301,049 shares voted against the approval, and 4,923 shares abstained from voting. So based on the vote, the motion to amend Article 10 has not passed, and I'll come back to that in a moment. Regarding the motion to ratify Grant Thornton, LLP, as our accountants for 2019, the inspectors report that a majority of the shares voted were for the ratification. The preliminary tally shows 1,079,841 shares voted for approving the amendment, 3,939 shares voted against the approval, and 22,882 shares abstained from voting. So based on the vote, the appointment of Grant Thornton has been ratified. Just going back to Article 10 and the amendment for a moment. The purpose of that was to really level the playing field because there is a provision that allows shareholders who own more than 5% of the company and held that position prior to a certain date that certainly well preceded, any of the other 5% shareholders. They have an ability to to engage in a transaction with the company, assuming only 50% of the shareholders support it, so long as the board of directors is in agreement. For shareholders who are not grandfathered under this provision, the supermajority requirement for shareholders seeking to engage in a transaction with the company that the board has not approved goes up to 85%. There was a large block that changed its vote, is my understanding, and so that's why this one didn't pass. And I just wanted to give a bit of color to explain what that meant, but essentially the group that held shares prior to the implementation of Article 10 can theoretically, with the support of management, with the support of the board, seek to engage in a transaction with the company with a 50% approval rating rather than 85%.
There were, as I heard the numbers, maybe I was wrong, more than 50% of the shares represented. 500.
It needs to be, to amend the articles of incorporation, my understanding is it needs to be a majority of shares held. Yes.
I guess my second question is that if the owner of 5% was held by one individual, one structure, if that structure were to change and the shares were held by multiple people or multiple groups, then they would no longer be grandfathered, is that correct? But individuals would no longer own 5% prior to.
I think that the group is still treated as a group, and given that it's voted as a group, my guess is that that is still in force. Okay. So at this time, I would just like to give special recognition to Jan Loeb and Marjorie Nesbitt and Don Hoffman, who will be retiring from the board after this meeting is wound up. And I think that the entire company, all the employees, I don't think any of us would be here today if it wasn't for the work that Don and Margie did early in the 1990s to really transform Keweenaw from a company that had for over a century been a passive landholder and really transformed it into a properly and professionally managed forest products company. And so they've been board members for, I believe, 28 and 30 years, perhaps, respectively. And I think that the company and the board and the shareholders owe them a debt of gratitude because they have given a lot, and we'll miss you. And again, I just wanted to thank you and acknowledge that in a lot of ways. We're losing folks who have been at close to the heart and soul of this company, and so you'll be greatly missed. And Jen as well, and I appreciate you. If there's no further business to come before the informational meeting, I would accept a motion for adjournment. If one of the proxies makes the motion.
I move that the informational portion of the meeting be adjourned.
You've heard the motion to adjourn. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
The motion is carried. The meeting is adjourned. And thank you very much, everyone, for your attendance today.
That works really well.